Good evening, ghouls and goblins. This is your ringmaster, the Wolfman, and this is going to be a special episode on my thoughts on ghost hunting. Been watching and catching up on ghost adventures on Discovery Plus, and I have a lot of thoughts about things like that. Plus, I talk about seeing the Hat Man and the mysteries that go with that. All right, kiddies, this is a special episode. I need to wind down. I just did, from start to finish, from scratch, 19 figures. And it's been a somewhat stressful but productive week. And I need some me time and to wind down. As I've been working my ass off the last 4 days, I've been catching up on Ghost Adventures. And I know I make fun of Zach and that show in particular a lot. But if I'm making fun of it, it obviously means I'm watching it, which means in some ways I still like it. I do like Aaron. I think Aaron, Billy, and Jay do a great job. I don't know about this new guy. I guess he's going to be a recurring character now, James. Zach is a very irritating person. The couple times I met him, he tried to be nice, but would stay away, kind of observed me out of the corner of his eye, doesn't like to be around people, very germophobic, you know, even before and now after the pandemic. And I think it's ridiculous that somebody on a nationally syndicated show is still wearing a mask. I mean, imagine if I did a podcast with millions of listeners, and I'm like, well, today on the podcast, we're all going to be talking about yourselves. But I mean, like, it's fucking Charlie Brown. Take the goddamn mask off. If you got to stand 6 feet away, that's fine. Well, I can't go in there because I'm, you know, it can't be around mold. Well, your career is based around going into dilapidated buildings. You probably should have thought of that beforehand. But I made mention last year that I truly believe once somebody makes a deal with the devil that their body starts deteriorating. And if you noticed, halfway through his 25 seasons, he went from the muscle jock, big-nosed, big-armed, aggressive type to sort of the skinny, frail guy, and everything start failing on him. His eyesight's going. His health is going. He's having trouble breathing now. He can't go anywhere without wearing a respirator, and now he's being attacked more often. And I noticed a lot of the same things working with Dennis up at the Bunny Ranch, who was the owner. And I thought, I believed at one point maybe he had made a deal with the devil, changed all of his codes to 666, and his business cards all had that number on it. And then he started having more and more diabetic problems. I mean, that probably has nothing to do with it, but it's just a theory I have, as is most everything with ghost hunting. It's all just a theory, and for one person to claim that they know everything about it, regardless of the experiences you have, I think defeats the purpose. You really have to stand outside of the box while ghost hunting or experiencing paranormal activity. One of the things that bothers me the most is they all seem to be American, English-speaking, modern times ghosts that are revolving somehow around Christianity. And think about that. As I just actually saw a dark shadow go across my wall, that's kind of fun. You talk about these things, you notice these things more often. I've always said that, but I've always complained that you don't hear Unga Bunga talking through, you know, EVPs or anything else. You don't see, you know, samurai ghosts. Maybe you do, but, you know, in America, we tend to see nothing but Civil War, your grandparents, and things like that. So, and Zach tends to be the authoritative figure that he's made himself up to be, or that he believes himself to be. And I think he gets a lot of things wrong. There's a lot of other people out there that I feel have got closer to the reality of what a ghost is and how to communicate with them and what they say. I mean, there's been instances where if you hear something like a EVP that's two syllables, you're automatically going to think it's saying "help me" or something like that. And it if you listen to it without looking at the closed captioning, you're probably going to get a completely different answer. And that's what I've been doing. So the last 4 days after I recovered from the comic convention, I've been sitting at my desk drawing like a madman, catching up on figure commissions, doing absolutely everything I possibly can. And I listen to these shows in the background. And then when something interesting happens, I'll stop and I'll look up. And a lot of the times with the EVPs, he's like, "Did you hear that?" And then he does a thing where he gives you suggestive answers, preconceived suggestive answers to what he wants you to hear. And if you listen to it in real time, and if you're fast enough, can pause as you hear something, try and figure out what it says for yourself before he tells you what he wants you to think that it is. There was one time, actually, Billy actually corrected him in a recent episode where they were trying to get this demonic entity, because they're always fucking demonic entities, to say his name. And it went, you know, did one of those little sound effects. He's like, "Mike?" And Billy's like, "No, I think it said Lincoln." And then the SB7 reiterates what he says and then clearly states Lincoln. Now, I don't know many demons named Lincoln. That certainly wasn't in the Necronomicon. But hey, you know, everything to Zach is a dark entity or a demonic spirit. I swear to the way he says demonic, it's spelled like D-O-M-O-N-G-O-N-G-I-C-K. Demonic. Like, I don't understand it. It's like he enunciates everything so weird on this investigation. What's an geishin? I know geishas are those girls that dance around in feudal Japan. They're basically like, you know, Kiss, but hookers. Yeah, I could pick on Zach forever, but let me have a swig of beer on this oddly windy and cooled down 90 degree night here in Vegas, and we'll get into some ghost hunting. I now will debunk myself, because I just saw the shadow again and realized that I'm sitting in a dark room looking out into a room with a light, and I believe the shadows that I was seeing is bacteria floating on my eye. And that's something you have to keep in mind when you try and take these things as serious as you possibly can, that a lot of times when you see something out of the corner of your eye, it most likely is bacteria. If you've ever looked up to the sky without sunglasses on a bright, sunny-ass day, you're going to see little floaties. And they're clear. It's going to look like, you know, how the Predator appears in movies. You can see a form, but clearly can see through it. And at night, they will appear like a translucent shadow. So I believe that's what I had seen. So I'm not going to feel you full of bullshit all the time. And I will call my own self out on damn near everything. I get in more trouble being 100% honest, because everyone thinks I'm talking shit when I'm not. I'm actually just telling the truth people don't want to hear. Big difference there. So let's talk about the Hat Man for a second. Something popped up on Facebook, and oddly enough, when I tried to share it, nobody saw it but the one person who happened to be up at that moment. And I have a few people that like every single post that I do, and not even those people saw it. And I had gone in and commented on the original post, and I think the owner was deleting comments, or the author of the original post was deleting comments. So it showed a picture of a very tall, slender shadow standing in the corner at the end of a hallway. And he appeared to have a fedora or a brimmed hat on. And the meme said, if you saw this shit as a kid, you're probably now a pagan, a mystic, a supernatural enthusiast, psychic, intuitive, or a witch or something like that. And I ha-ha'd it and commented, and reading through a lot of people's comments was pretty revealing, because one person reminded us that this was the original nightmare that Wes Craven had to come up with the idea for Freddy Krueger. He had a dream that a man in a fedora that was a complete 100% shadow would invade his dreams at night, and that's what inspired him to create Nightmare on Elm Street. And other people were saying, as soon as they had seen this entity, which some had called a sleep paralysis demon, that it sort of opened their mind and gave them intuitive powers, or opened them up to seeing things more often. And then I remember when I saw the Hat Man. So I didn't know the Hat Man was a thing. I honestly thought this was just something that I had seen. And, you know, I keep a little dream journal, or I'll tell, you know, a few people my ghost stories and things like that. And, you know, I've had several instances where I say, you know, something's changed my life ever since this moment. But after seeing that meme, I forgot before my major incidents had happened in my, what do you call it? The teenage years, adolescence? Is that the puberty years? No? I don't know. Who cares? Anyway, I had forgot before my major event, where if any of you had been paying attention, I had a Rumpelstiltskin nightmare where something was warning me that it was about to take my firstborn child and busted through the door. I thought I was possessed. My dog saw it too. My mom had to knock me down, blah, blah, blah. And ever since then, I've been psychic intuitive. My first long-term girlfriend ended up having an abortion behind my back. And she had had nightmares beforehand saying that a little girl was saying, you killed me, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, if you don't remember, go back. It was a whole story, and it took like an hour to tell. But before that, I had seen the Hat Man, and I forgot that this was something that had maybe opened me up to being more intuitive and seeing physical beings, because I had always seen things. As a kid, I had nightmares about Muppets. I had nightmares about the devil. A lot of things like that, but I never saw the things in real life. And if I did, they were scenarios. Like, I remember waking up and seeing a hole in the wall with a little doorway with sort of glowing embers on the inside, where it literally seemed like a portal to hell had opened up. And I'm like 7 years old, 6 years old, maybe. And I didn't go in, obviously, but I sat there on my bed fully awake, peering from out underneath the blankets, and saw this glowing hole in the wall. I mean, and it was just like the gingerbread house furnace. You know, it had like perfect stone outline, a little wooden door, like a gnome had come through and opened this thing to a portal to hell. Well, I didn't actually see the gnome, and I didn't actually see the devil, but I assume both were on the other side, neither of which I was eager to go and find out if they actually were real or there. So, in my teenage years, I woke up, like I said, I'd always seen things, but I woke up in the middle of the night, almost early morning. I want to say this would have been about like 5 or 6 a.m., right before sunrise. I'm in Washington, Lakewood to be specific, and it's weird to explain. When you're in an apartment, your room isn't that big. But when you wake up and you see, like, the walls have extended and now your room is a lot bigger than what your brain remembered it to be, especially if you are feeling sleep paralysis. There was a guy standing in the corner. And, you know, about this time, you know, of course, I was a huge fan of The Undertaker. And that's the first thing that came to my mind is that The Undertaker's in my room staring at me. Very tall, except almost sickly skinny. No features, completely shadowed. Not even eyes, no glowing eyes, nothing like that. Just something there monitoring me. And I want to say that it had a ponytail, or somehow I could tell that it had long hair. But again, you couldn't see features. And it just sat there, stared at me, monitored me as I slept and woke from dreams or whatnot. And then it kind of did the long head nod down like a bow. And I fell back asleep. Like, it greeted me, and that was it. And then, I mean, that's it. All of this talk leading up to this, that's my Hat Man story. And after that, it was one thing after another. I would wake up in the middle of the night and see something that would look like the Gollum from The Lord of the Rings crawling on my ceiling. Sort of like that scene from Trainspotting with Ewan McGregor, where like it's like the baby crawling on the ceiling, but then it turns its head around backwards and starts talking to you. It was sort of like that, but more like the Licker from Resident Evil. And this thing was crawling across the ceiling, but had a very human face with dark, long hair. And this is even before I'd got into Japanese horror or was even allowed to watch horror movies. So where I would have got this image from, and I wasn't even a Lord of the Rings fan, I just attributed what it looked like now. Back then, I mean, I thought it was maybe an alien or something, but it introduced itself as Loki, sort of smiled and scampered out of the room from the ceiling into the living room. And then, of course, I had my big instance, the Rumpelstiltskin stuff after. I would wake up and I would see... there used to be a thing that truckers would have on their the lip of, or the nose of their semi-truck, where it was like fingers on the edge, the nose hanging over, and then just the eyes peering up from this sort of like plastic bug guard that they would put on the front of their trucks. I would see something like that at the edge of my bed, like inches from my face, where something was grasping the edge of my bed. The nose was fairly visible, but kind of like those howler monkeys where they have like the long, elongated, puffy nose. And I would just see these like really surprised eyes, like this thing was watching me. And when I recognized it, it was shocked that I could see it and see what it was. You know, so imagine you're an entity and you are invisible to the naked eye and something locks eyes with you. I imagine that was pretty terrifying for it as much as it was for me. And of course, the thing freaked out the minute we locked eyes and sunk back, you guessed it, under the bed. So, you know, it's just, it didn't bother me. At that point in my life, that Rumpelstiltskin nightmare was the scariest thing in my entire life that I was ever going to go through. From that point on, and after seeing the Hat Man, I was never afraid again. I'm still not afraid again. I've had guns pointed at me. I've been in fights. I've had medical issues. I've been around disasters, crashes, all sorts of things. Never felt fear again after that instant. I just figured, after growing up literally afraid of everything, that this is the most scared I was ever going to be. I had no reason to be scared ever again. And it held true. So, yeah, that's my Hat Man story. And reading through the comments on Facebook, it seemed I wasn't the only one. It seemed like other people had a very similar coming of age story where they would see this thing at the end of the hallway, blink and it would get closer, blink and it would get closer, blah, 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 that kind of thing, horror movie kind of shit. And it doesn't ever seem to attack. Not one person said, this thing attacked me. One did say it seemed like it was being held down by it, like it was sleep paralysis. But in my mind's eye, I wasn't getting a vision of this thing straddling it and, you know, choking it down. More like a mental telepathy thing, like it's keeping the person on the bed. And I guess that's what it does. But what it is or who it is beyond everyone. And as far as mythos and lore that's on the internet, that's all I could find on it. So if you've seen the Hat Man, let me know. I would love to hear your story. Even if you have a ghost story that's similar, that maybe you had that one experience that opened you up to many more, it'd be interesting to see how similar some of these things are. You know, because you're not crazy. I mean, I am. We'll talk about that in a second. Let me take another swig of beer. So I watched an episode, and this is something that I said I was going to make an entire episode on. May go quicker than I think. I was watching an episode of Ghost Adventures, you know, for something that happened in Henderson, which is about 15 miles south of me and a little south of Vegas. And I like to watch local stories and ghost stories, especially because I want to know if I'm experiencing the same thing someone else is and if this is a regional thing. Unlike Hatman, which seems to be a national thing, everyone in America seemed to have seen this. I didn't see a single person in the UK comment that they had seen something like that, because I imagine they would probably just assume it was Jack the Ripper, because I guess the thing does have a trench coat or some sort of long overcoat. Well, this guy is telling his story, and Zach's trying to console him on Ghost Adventures, and he's crying, and he says, I don't want to talk about it. I thought I was possessed. And I mean, this guy went through absolute hell. He thought he had seen things crawling all over him like leeches or salamanders or lizards or something. And even during the daytime, and he remembered one time where he was driving and felt these all over him with his wife in the car, had to pull over next to a park, grabbed one of these things, chucked it out the window, and then watched it climb up the tree and jump branch to branch until it got to the very top. And I've seen stuff like that. There was a time I was in a place, a mining town, an abandoned mining town up in the hills on the Masonic Trail in California. It's called Chemung. And my buddy and I had gone up there. And at one point, we chased something, or rather he did. I was leaning on the truck that I eventually got pushed off of. That's, you know, a fun story too. But he saw this thing jump from branch to branch, a clear sort of predator type thing that you couldn't see but could still see the outline of. And he chased it into the mining encampment and saw this thing go up the rafters of a building and then into trees and, you know, whatnot, and the foliage, and disappeared. So this seems to be a California-Nevada thing. I haven't heard of any other stories like that. It doesn't seem to be a cryptid or a cryptozoological, that's a word for you, cryptozoological thing, like, you know, which is a fancy word for a made-up creature. But this guy saw these things and saw things in his house that he was disturbed by, so much so that he thought he was possessed, and he recounted a story much like my Rumpelstiltskin one, and thought that something had entered him at one point. And next thing he knows, he's running across the rooftops and was trying to jump roof to roof. I don't know how the hell he would have got up on a roof, let alone think he could jump from a roof to another roof, but he didn't make it. and he landed, shattered his leg, and cracked a couple of ribs and had to go to the hospital. And when they got him into the hospital, he tried to recount his story, was still very paranoid and freaked out by the paranormal experience he had just had. And they put him under 72-hour psych evaluation. Which I'll fully admit now, I've hinted at these things a lot of times. I've never actually really talked about this. That happened to me. I did get put into a mental facility for 3 days. That seems to be the standard procedure, and it was hard to watch because you see the pain and the anguish on this guy's face, and he would watch the videos and not realize that was him, or he doesn't remember doing the things that he had done on these surveillance videos in the house. And the 3 days in the hospital, the mental facility, didn't help him. In fact, it made the situation much, much worse. And the same sort of thing happened to me. So my quick story on that was, unfortunately, the job I had that I had made reference to several times about working at a specific biker bar, it was almost mandatory that people did cocaine to get through the shift, to handle things, and to stay on the up and up, stay alert, and basically live in hell. And I'd never done drugs before, and this was my first experience with that. So after a couple of months of doing this, and I hadn't even realized at that point that cocaine was more like an Adderall for me, where it would calm me down and help me focus, because I guess I'm ADD or ADHD or whatever it is now. I'm self-diagnosing or saying, because I'm assuming that's what it is. I haven't actually gone and got it. Anyway, long story short on that is I started reading up on it because I heard all sorts of horror stories about cocaine, that if you did it, your teeth would fall out, that sometimes it's laced with fentanyl, and just a pinprick worth of fentanyl can send you into cardiac arrest and kill you. Just horror stories and horror stories. And one thing I read was that it makes you severely depressed when you try and lay off of it, or sometimes even suicidal until you get it again. And I got drunk one night while still working at this place, and I had been off the stuff for about a month, and all of a sudden it hit me wrong. And in my drunken state, I didn't want any more of it because it sobers you up instantly. I didn't want the drug to fix that. And I started crying and bawling. My buddies are trying to break me out of this psychosis that I was entering. And I kept saying, I want to patch out. I want to patch out. Well, I wasn't in a biker gang, but because of the place I was working in and their affiliations with motorcycle clubs, I had thought at one point that basically by working there meant that I had somehow become an associate or an affiliate of these motorcycle clubs, and I was freaking out, and I thought I was going to die. We were getting in fights with these types all the time, warnings and threats of shootouts, and several times we would have to chain the doors shut and get all the customers out the back. I mean, it was a nightmare. It was like living Sons of Anarchy, and I hated it. So one night I got drunk and absolutely freaked out and said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to patch out. And of all things, my friends called my mom, and she had to come pick me up, and I came back to the house and, slept it off, finally admitted to her that I had done drugs, and she freaks out, and I freak out, and then I get mad because she freaks out, and then blah, blah, blah. It was a bad, bad story. So about a week later, I had recovered from that thing, gone out to jam with friends, parked on the top floor of a parking garage, and for sympathy's sake, started telling my friends as I'm bawling and drunk as fuck. I was reaching out looking for sympathy and help because I wanted someone to answer questions that I didn't have the answer to. And I kept saying, you know, nobody loves me. I'm sick of this. I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, if for all intents and purposes, it did seem like I was suicidal. And I came home and I made a couple of copy-paste texts to some girls that I was, you know, kind of dating, talking to, flirting with at the time. And I thought, I was trying to get one of them over so that I wouldn't be alone, because I didn't want to be alone. I wasn't afraid and I wasn't suicidal, but I basically said, in a way, I wanted to delete Facebook. Thank you for being a friend, but I'm done. And I meant that I was going to delete Facebook and be done being social and all that kind of shit. And of course it came across completely wrong in my drunken state. Next thing I know, one of these girls came over to the house and was banging on the windows because she thought I had already committed suicide. And another one had called the cops thinking that I was suicidal. So I had my mom, a different girl, and the cops all show up at the same time. And I just started bawling, and I finally told them, look, yeah, maybe I do need some help. I think it's the drugs. I think something's wrong. Something is happening in my brain. I don't know what's wrong. And they said, would you like to go to the hospital? And I said, yeah, okay, that's fine. Maybe they can tell me what's wrong with me, or can affirm that the stuff in my system, which hadn't been there in over 6 weeks now at this point, that's why I was feeling this way. Because I'd never felt this way before and, you know, mortally saddened over stupid shit before. Get to the hospital. Next thing I know, I'm on a hold. They take my cell phone. They take all my shit away from me. They put me in a gown. They've got me shackled to the bed. All this kind of shit. So basically what happened was, without my knowing what was going on, by me saying, yes, let me go to the hospital, even though I didn't have insurance and everything, that they were going to cover it, they basically had arrested me and were sending me to a psych ward and put me on suicide watch. And that's what Vegas does. And it's a real unfortunate thing, because it makes the situation that much worse. So I really feel for the guy when he's going through all of this stuff and saying that they tried different drugs, and every time you get a new drug, they want to keep you a week later. I mean, I sobered up the minute I got to the facility, and you know, it's like prison. They check your ass crack for razor blades, make sure there's nothing in the room or around you that you can commit suicide with. And, you know, just, God, it was an absolute terrible experience. And I kept trying to tell them, look, I'm not psychotic. I had a temporary episode of depression due to alcohol and from trying to go clean with cocaine and, you know, whatever else that was going on with too much alcohol in my system. And they didn't care. They didn't want to listen. There was no sympathy. There was nothing there. And I really thought maybe they were going to do some blood work to say, you know what, you've got too much of this in your bloodstream from kidney disease or something. I don't know. And that's what's giving you these weird thoughts. And they didn't. Vegas just doesn't want to help you, and they don't give a fuck about you. So anytime you do anything that seems just a tad suspicious, they're going to cuff you to a bed, strip you of all your humanity, and throw you in a psych ward. Or if you're sick, which has happened to my mom now that I reiterated with her illness lately and her kidney thing, and even people I had talked to at the convention where she's saying that her mom felt sick, went to the hospital, and all they did was give her an IV and a Pedialyte, assumed she was drunk, and tried to send her on her way. So Vegas just doesn't give a shit. They either assume you're drunk or you're high on drugs or you're suicidal, and their fix to it is either IV or suicide watch. And so it was stupid. Basically, you know, so the short of the story on that with me is I had basically told them and refused all their services, the blood work. They wanted to put me on antidepressants and try this drug and try that drug. But I was reading everything on the wall, Know Your Rights, all the pamphlets and the counseling sessions. And I kept trying to tell them, you know, this is wrong. I'm being held against my will and threatening to sue and all that sort of shit. And that this wasn't helping the situation at all, that I wanted to see a doctor. And I meant like a medical doctor, not a fucking psychiatrist. And, yeah, So complete waste of time and made the whole situation worse. Now, I hadn't actually, after that experience, I basically learned a few things, was more hateful and spiteful than I'd ever been in my entire life, and just changed a lot of ways to where I didn't talk about feelings. I didn't drink for about a year and a half. I didn't do any drugs for a good 2.5 years after that instance. I think I tried like cocaine one more time after that, and it just didn't do anything for me. I haven't done it since. And it just, the whole situation didn't help me go clean. It made me more angry at society, because if that ever happened to me again, I'd be a homicidal maniac, and, you know, we don't like to hear those kinds of stories. So anyway, as it pertains to ghost hunting, it sucks that anytime someone has a ghost story, they sort of go into burn the witch mode and just assume that you're psychotic, or if you claim to be possessed, they're going to assume you're schizophrenic, and they don't actually look at the root of the problem. So this poor guy, even Ghost Adventures, didn't do anything to help the situation. Just got a bunch of evidence that his house was haunted. So medically, nothing helped him, and the Ghost Adventures team didn't help him. And this poor guy is still afflicted with everything that he is going through, which sucks, and I feel bad for him. So yes, basically, I can add on my Tinder profile that I escaped from Arkham Asylum, which apparently people like crazy people anyway, so that was a, you know, fun little thing. And actually, as soon after that instance, I quit the job at the biker bar, went underground and disappeared for about 2 years, didn't jam with music friends, didn't work in a bar, started working from home, and just kind of changed a lot of things after that instant, because I will never be put in that situation again. And it sucks that the state and cops and people aren't there to help you, and medical professionals aren't there to help you. They don't give a shit. Counselors, maybe. I don't even think they give a shit, because I've mentioned before, there was one time in college I got sent to anger management, and she, you know, basically like shaking a Coke bottle with your thumb over the opening, I mean, told me, just get over it. Why are you so angry at this shit? And I about threw the chair through the, and her, through the window. So, you know, it is what it is. This is why I have so little tolerance for people that self-diagnose themselves and claim to have mental illnesses, because the people that actually do or actually want to find help can't get it, or the help doesn't work. Like, I would love to have a magic fucking happy pill that would make me, you know, full of serotonin, puppy dogs and unicorn farts all goddamn day. I would love that. For some people, it's weed. Doesn't work for me. I've tried it. Some people, it's microdosing on shrooms. Did one drug, didn't work out so well for me. Not doing anymore. It's just, it sucks. So now let's get back into the ghost hunting part of it. This is what bothers me about 90% of the ghost hunting shows that's out there. And especially now that I've finished everything in season 24 and 25 of Ghost Adventures, now I'm on their house calls where people are being afflicted or their kids are in danger because of an entity that's in their house. And Ghost Adventures basically goes to your house, proves that you have something, and then goes, okay, good luck with that, and finger guns and walks out the door. Ghost hunters will try and explain it away scientifically and then tell you, you know, it's all in your head sort of thing. I think Paranormal State used to be the only one that would go around and give you some advice for whatever you believed in to help you get through this, or to cleanse your house. And sometimes Jay will do that on Ghost Adventures. But for the most part, like, he didn't help the guy from Henderson. There was even another one. And this is, God, it's so stupid. And I don't understand how people don't see this. So another instance of Ghost Adventures not helping in any way. they were called to a house that the family was afflicted, serious damage, things flying all over the place, being held down in their sleep, just, you know, shadow people, everything going wrong that possibly could go wrong. They found evidence, they proved, or, you know, as far as they best they could, proved that things were there. And they basically came up with the idea that it was Native American spirits that were in the house, that apparently they were pissed that the house had been built. You know, of course, it's going to be a Native American burial ground. They might have found, I think they found bones or something like that. I don't remember. It was something stupid like that. But then the person that's telling the story of how they're afflicted and what's going on in their house says it just like this. She said, oh, yeah, we found evidence of bones. We believe they're Native American. And Zach's like, well, what kind of things do you see around the house, though, that would make you believe that? Oh, I see these five demon spirits outside in the yard. And I'm like, what? Demons? Wait, I thought we were talking about indigenous people. Why does everything Zach say have to be a dark entity or a demonic presence? Like, we were just talking about Native Americans. They don't have demons. They have skinwalkers. They have dark shamans. Things like that. They don't believe in Christian demons. In fact, that's part of the whole reason why Native Americans are so fucking angry, is because white people came over, took over their land, and tried to push Christianity on them. And now you're telling me that all of a sudden Native Americans have demons outside your house? So what does Zach do? He's like, well, you know, we could call a priest. We're going to cleanse the house with sage, and we're going to make this right so that you know, feel that everything's okay. And of course, the show ends with the little caption, a month later, they're still being afflicted, and we're going to check back on them later. So basically, nothing that fucking worked. Well, obviously, because they tried to do Christian rites of exorcism on Native American spirits, if that is actually what was there. You know, and it just, it goes back to my whole rant on religion. If I were doing a ghost hunt where I was trying to find what was wrong with the house and I was genuinely trying to help, I would ask the belief system of the person being afflicted. And then as a placebo to comfort them, I would bring in the aid to that religion for whatever reason, be it a priest or a shaman or a witch or, a pagan druid. I don't know. I would bring in something that would make that person feel at ease in their own household, and have the help do whatever, you know, religious thing that they needed to do. But what bothers me the most about Zach is every single time, it's like when he screens these people that are going to be on the show or the locations, it's like he tells them all, I'm not coming out unless it's demonic or a dark entity. And how does that help anything? In fact, I even had a theory at one point, if you watch things like that and it actually was a demonic entity, that it can come through your TV and into your household. There's been a few episodes where he's actually warned of that and said, we're going to show Peggy, don't look in her eyes. Well, of course, everyone's going to look in the eyes. We're going to take to this haunted location that it can, you know, transfer from this to this. So I'm watching house calls, and he's at his office in the haunted museum above the gift shop. And, you know, for those that don't know, I did work there, so that's how I know these things. He's on a video call with the people that are actually in the house. And he's trying through the phones and through the TVs to ask questions and do remote EVP sessions. What? Are you picking up on what I'm trying to tell you here? If Zach can sit in Las Vegas and communicate with ghosts through a TV, with a household in Connecticut, don't you think that if that were possible, all of us watching the damn show could have that thing come through the fucking TV and into our household? Because he's sitting there like, oh, something just moved in my room as I'm trying to talk to this entity. Okay. So as I'm watching this show, is something going to move in my room now? I mean, people just don't think of this stuff. And I think that's what bothers me the most about it is people are so quick to be entertained that they don't see the other side and they don't think of other things. And for every single episode to be about demons and demonic entities, it's somewhat alarming that he would almost promote this as, we caught this stuff, we're going to show you demonic spirits and shadows on the TV so that it can enter your household through the TV. Good luck with that. Thanks. Bye, guys. So here's the thing. I truly believe we need to come up with a new bad guy because the devil's not working anymore. In fact, the devil is such a popular character now, he's almost the good guy. Which is another little, you know, side note on Zach. He gets all of his information wrong all of the time. Satanists do not believe in the devil. I don't know if you know this. If you are a Satanist, you're actually believing in yourself and that there is no God and that you aren't praying to the devil. You are just, you're into self-awareness and self-magic and things like that. Luciferians are ones that actually believe in the devil and worship the devil. And, you know, and this is what people don't think of. To believe in the devil is to believe in God. So if you are a Satanist, you're telling me that Jesus is real. And if you tell a Satanist that, they'll freak the fuck out on you. Because they're believing in the fictional character that's been so popularized over the last few millennia. It used to be so bad, and I truly believe it ended in about 1987. And the devil had a good run. He really did. The Christian Reformations, the Renaissance era, the 15th century, everything. If you so much as even farted the wrong direction, they would say you're a child of the devil, burn you alive, or cut off your head, put a stake through your heart, and bury you. I mean, you could not say the word devil or Satan without 99% of the population freaking out. Nowadays, if you say the word demon or devil or demonic or Lucifer, Morningstar, any of the other words for that individual, you're most likely going to get a knuckle bump or somebody's going to give you the NWO 2 sweet and they're going to do the sign of the devil. You know, the devil is cool now. In fact, he's one of my favorite fictional characters. I do not believe I'm going to go to a lava-filled place full of red-skinned creatures with pointed tails and horns. I also don't believe I'm going to be sitting on magical clouds with golden cities of paradise. I don't see how people can believe in that stuff. And I'm not even agnostic. I'm not even an atheist or anything like that. I mean, I don't believe when you die that you just cease to exist. I do believe in a soul. I do believe in a higher power. And I do believe you transcend to something else, be it the big computer in the sky if we're just in the Matrix or whatnot. But I'll just say this. The Vatican knows something that they're not revealing if they're keeping all kinds of secrets. Because if there truly was alien life form out there, are you telling me they believe in the same God that we do, that Jesus transcended Earth and in those 3 days went to Saturn and talked to those guys? Or that if you believed in Muhammad or anything like that, that, you know, even fucking Joseph and the Mormons or whatever the people in Utah do, that these people were in the next galaxy talking to those people? What if the giant Cthulhu octopus spaghetti god in the sky is the alien god, and all of the octopus and the kraken and the squid in the sea really are aliens, and they're actually the gods of this Earth? How do we know? We don't, because that's why we watch ghost shows. We want to know what's in the other world and what happens after death. Now, I will say there are a ton of unexplainable things that I've seen that I believe are out there, like the Hat Man. Like, I do think that there are some things that could be considered or called demons, but they're not like Mephisto in Marvel Comics. I believe they're shadow entities that can possess a spirit or influence you in one way or another. And from what a lot of people believe, that they attach themselves like a balloon to your belt loop via a string, that if you don't cut the cord and let that balloon fly, you're going to have an attachment. And I believe I have several attachments, darker attachments from things I've been around and experienced in my life. But I really believe that we need to come up with a new bad guy, because to me, it seems like organized religion was a way to control the population into a set of morals so that you wouldn't revolt, or you wouldn't, do the wrong thing. Because these things are very outdated. You know, don't covet your neighbor's wife. That's one of the Ten Commandments, yet everybody is a polygamist and androgynous person now, where they don't know what sex they are, and they'll fuck anything and lick everything's asshole. Like, I'm pretty sure everybody would be in the fiery pits of hell over that one by now. And that's another thing. Who's to say I go to hell because of your religion? You're telling me you're the only correct one? Look at the Queen's funeral. This is something I didn't get to touch on in the last episode, was all those world leaders showed up, and we're talking from the Middle East, from Canada. God knows what you guys believe in. The great moose in the sky? I don't know. The great maple syrup gods. I'd worship that. That shit's good. All these people went to a cathedral and went to a Christian mass for a burial of a, as they actually said, a good Christian spirit. So are you just there supporting your crazy friends talking about, you know, the big palace in the sky? Or did everyone all of a sudden just believe that they were Christian for a day and that the Queen is going to heaven? Or if you believe she killed Diana and killed off her retarded step cousins, or had a hand in slavery or this and that, that she's burning in hell right now? Ask the guys from Saudi Arabia if that's where they believe the Queen is right now. Do they think the evil jinn put her in the magic genie's bottle in their version of hell? Or do you think she's with 40 versions with Allah Akbar? Who's right? I mean, personally, I hope I go to Valhalla. I think drinking with a bunch of Vikings and still having sex and drinking and enjoying food for all of eternity sounds a hell of a lot better than being in a sexless, non-drinking, non-entertainment, no heavy metal music sort of heaven. Or burning in this, you know, brimstone, hellfire shit. But the devil's not working anymore. And now they're trying to play it off as politics, and they're still trying to find a way to control you through some outdated moral code. And everybody is so against morals and respect these days that there's no fear Like I was saying in the last one, there's no fear of repercussion. There's no fear of doing anything wrong. Back then, people wouldn't steal because they were afraid they were going to hell. They wouldn't fuck their neighbor's wife because they were afraid they were going to hell. I mean, I remember when I had to admit I was finally having sex, and I felt like such a heathen because I was having premarital sex, and my church made me feel like I was going to hell. But then again, they also made me feel like I was going to hell because I had long hair and was a boy, and I listened to music with electric distorted guitars and drums in it. So do you go to a better hell because you just listen to music and you masturbate, or because you fucked the preacher's wife, who also flirted with me and while teaching her guitar wanted me to, you know, grab her tit? So, you know, I guess if you're going to go to hell, you might as well go to hell for something good. You know, like fist fuck a couple babies and box the fuck out of some dumbass parent. I don't know. So I've ranted about a lot of these things, religion, shared a personal story, and complained about Ghost Adventures. But I don't want to be like Ghost Adventures and leave you hanging. I don't want to just tell everyone what they're doing wrong without giving a solution. So if you are interested in ghost hunting and contacting the other world, a relative, your dog Fluffy, or Unga Bunga, I have a couple of tips for you. Try and do different things that maybe whatever you're trying to contact believed in. Light a candle if they were pagan. Apparently candles will be a beacon of light that they can see, but other people believe that they're just always around you. I suppose hanging a pendulum or something could work. Something that can't be affected by wind or nose whistles or something like that. What I would like to do, and I'm going to try this experiment at one point, is I'm going to hang up a tree that has a, you know, the pewter pendulum on one end of a chain, a cross on another one, Thor's hammer on another one, maybe Islamic star on another one, and take it to different locations and just see if you could get one of them to spin, like just one, and see which one you're talking to. Or they always have the one hanging and they're like, rotate it to the right if it's yes, rotate it to the left if it's no. I mean, maybe it hurts to touch something religious. I don't think people think about stuff like that. Or when you ask a ghost to use your energy to communicate, maybe by turning on, if this is an entity made out of electromagnetic frequencies, and you turn on the recording part of a phone, maybe it's like cattle prodding them. So I don't know that that's the greatest idea. I also wouldn't set up things that are coincidental or happenstance. Like a lot of people will unscrew a flashlight just barely enough and turn it on so that it could turn off and on itself. I mean, you're just basically asking for a shooting star at that point, where if it does happen, you're going to freak out even though it's just something completely random or a meteorite. I don't think Ouija boards or spirit boards are a great communication device. I even think like the spirit boxes are sort of bunk, because what you're doing is channeling very fast through different radio stations, and supposedly through the white noise a spirit can communicate. But what ends up happening is you could get monster truck as a word on one frequency, and then the next one is Queen Elizabeth, and all you caught as it changed fast between two channels was Mon from Monster Truck and Kwee from Queen, and you're going to be sitting there wondering what the fuck a Mon Kwee is. You know, Mon Kwee. What? Oh, shit, it's Unga Bunga trying to talk to me. Oh, yeah. Oh, what did it say? Oh, it said, help me. Of course I heard that. No, you heard two different syllables from two different radio stations. I would think doing white noise on an old static TV could work. Because that's something that won't pick up a channel. There really aren't analog antenna channels anymore. So see if you can't get something through the white noise of a TV. I also think film, actual film, like Polaroid, would do a lot better than the phones in our camera. Because, I'm sorry, the camera in our phones. My phone, anytime I try and focus on something with a light, puts little green orbs all over the picture. And then everyone's like, oh, it's an alien. You know, I'm trying to take a picture of the stealth bomber at night. And then it reflects a green orb. They're like, yeah, but look at the thing following it. No, it's a reflection. But you didn't used to get that with a camcorder or a standalone recorder even. For some reason with phones, it's too reflective of a screen. So I don't think that's a good idea for ghost hunting. I honestly would just sit there and listen. Maybe, you know, I don't think lighting a candle works, because if you light a candle in a dark room and you stare at a candle, you're going to burn your retinas. And then anytime you stare at something with a light in a dark room, when you look away, you're going to see a light. You ever seen those things where you stare at the ink blot, and then when you look at a white wall, it turns into the visage of Jesus? It's going to be that sort of thing, too. Also, staring into a mirror, I don't believe that works either. Because even if it's not a haunted mirror from Bram Stoker's collection that Bela Lugosi stared in, blah, blah, blah. If you stare into any reflective surface, it's going to start to darken the longer you go without blinking. You could try it looking at a star. If you focus in on one star, that star is going to disappear after a while. And you almost have to look away from it to focus on the one star again. So I would sit in a room and ask questions. And if you can't hear it in the physical realm, meditate until you could hear it in your ears or in your head, almost psychically. And then ask yourself questions and see what comes out. You could try automatic writing. Put a hand or put a pen or some marking utensil in your non-drawing hand and see if you can't draw or write things. Ask questions and then scribble and see if something comes out. But then when you do, make sure to hold it up to a mirror, because then you're basically essentially writing backwards if that's your non-dominant hand. I guess recording devices could work, but again, with radio interference, I'll tell you, there's one time I thought I was talking to a ghost because I was playing guitar and then all of a sudden I heard talking through my amp, and I listened and I couldn't figure it out. Well, for whatever reason, I had put my phone on top of the amp and the pickups were picking up something, and for one reason or another, I heard a radio station come through the speakers of my guitar amp. Something to do with the magnets. So, you know, you gotta, through trial and error, figure out these things. I would ask something to be moved. I think that's probably a pretty easy one. Set up a few objects, not round objects, but like, say, a pen or something that you know can't move on its own, even if you happen to just... I mean, I saw one Ghost Adventures episode where they had put two spatulas in a teepee formation on a table, and then they went about their business, and when they fell down, they're like, oh, look, the ghost pushed it down. It's like, no, bitch, the thing fell down on its own because you just literally tried to balance two kitchen utensils with rounded edges against each other. I mean, that's just dumb. There's got to be some ways to do it. And I'll tell you the things that I do. Like, I do like an EMF detector where you can detect electromagnetic frequencies, because that's sort of hard to fake. You can ask questions, and if it'll light up, you know, orange or red for a serious answer, or just kind of like that yellow that it's got a blip. But you got to be careful, because if you put an EMF detector next to a router or someplace that has Wi-Fi, or even worse, if you have security cameras, this is something you may not know, is that an EMF detector will pick those up, and you'll basically be talking to a Wi-Fi router. So in the middle of a forest, an EMF detector is probably real good to have, because there's no way it should be doing that. Basically, what you need to do is you have to find something that isn't supposed to happen and make it happen, and that's how you know it's paranormal, for whatever reason. I mean, if you want to spin the bottle on pavement, and then if it reverses direction and starts spinning the other way, okay, you know you got something there. So you have to be creative with it. So that's some of my advice, some of the things that I've kind of witnessed and gone through. Hopefully it helps, but yeah. Just be careful and think outside the box, and don't believe everything you're told. And that goes for everything. Politics, religion, TV shows, ghost hunters, everything. Think for yourself. And then try and come up with the most rational solution or answer. And then if you can't come up with an answer, it's probably paranormal then. Have fun, be safe, stay sane.